Guys, are you looking for that extra confidence when it's time to have fun? Let me tell you about BlueChew.com. BlueChew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable form and at a fraction of the cost. BlueChew's tablets help men combat all forms of ED. BlueChew is also an online prescription service, so no visits to the doctor's office, no awkward conversations, and no waiting in line at the pharmacy, and it ships right to your door in a discreet package. The process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com, consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. And the best part, all done online. Blue Chew's tablets, made in the United States, and they prepare and ship direct, so it's cheaper than a pharmacy. And here's a special deal for our listeners. Try Blue Chew free when you use our promo code URBAN at checkout. Just pay $5 shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code URBAN to receive your first month free. Empire.
You thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the urban sports scene.
You are listening to the urban sports scene with myself, Wole, Will T, and Ray Jeezy are out. But you know what? We got a banger, man. It's Beltway Baseball Swag Show Edition, bro. Anyway, we're the urban sports scene, and we're part of Empire Media at AmpireMedia.com. Empire Media hosts multiple DMV sports podcast shows, such as the John Kime Report, hosted by ESPN Washington Commanders insider John Kime, and Jones Football, hosted by USA Today insider Mike Jones. And you can subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search the urban sports scene. Also, make sure, because I don't want y'all to forget, make sure you subscribe to the Urban Sports Scene YouTube channel as well. Also, this show can be found on Podcast DC, the local app with hundreds of options in local news and health in the DMV region. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all of the Empire shows as well as other great content. Don't forget to tweet us at Urban Sports Scene. Hit us up on IG at Urban Sports Scene and like our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. If you tweet us and whatnot, we'll read it on the show, man. So make sure tweet, Facebook comments, IG, we read it on the show, man. Also, join our Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene, sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and sports debates. Will T is not in the building, but he would normally say this. Hey, Wole, let's get into our tradition, the pregame. Here's what we have on tap. I'll talk about Washington Nationals outfielder Juan Soto rejecting the Nationals' $440 million contract. Jesus Christ. Kevin Nibley from Talking Nats will join me to discuss this. At 8:25, I'll chat about the Baltimore Orioles. My Baltimore Orioles. Magical play going into the All-Star break. Tony Petit from Orioles Hangout will join the show to discuss this. Finally, in our segment HBCU Corner, We have a pre-taped interview with Grambling State University football coach Hugh Jackson. Hey, but first, right now, we have the homie Kevin Nibley from Talk Nats on the line. What's going on, Kev?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're doing good, man. Kev, just me. So it's going to be me and you. We're going to run this thing now. We're going to run this segment.
Okay. All right. I'm ready to go.
I know you're ready, Kev. I seen you on Twitter. I love the energy. I know where you're going. I feel it. So let's get right into it, man. Let's dive right into it. All right, the Washington Nationals are considering trading Juan Soto this month after he turned down a 15 year, $440 million offer from the team. Your thoughts when you heard that he rejected the offer?
I mean, it's an obvious thought. It's that he doesn't want to finish his career with the Nats, you know, which is okay. I just think he's a player that we've seen this on social media before. I think he wants to be in New York, LA, Chicago, big market. You know, he wants all of that. You know, the offer the Nats presented him was more than fair. It was the most money ever presented to a player for an extension in the history of baseball. Yeah. You know, so, you know, him and Scott Boras have thrown out this line in the last week or so that, oh, well, like the AAV, the, you know, annual average salary, et cetera, you know, it's too low. It's only 29 million, you know, and yes, if you look at it in a bubble, they've gotten some people to get on that idea where, oh, like he'd only be the 19th or 20th highest paid player by average salary, you know, which is true. But, you know, the Nationals offered him that for 15 years. You know, that means when he's 36 years old and he's hitting 220 and, you know, with 15 home runs. Which normally happens, you know, when he only can play, you know, 40 games a season, you know, because he gets some, you know, lat strain and like doesn't want to play for 40 games. You know, look at Anthony Rendon out there in LA, you know, I mean, that guy misses half a season every year and he's only 31, 32, I believe, you know, this would have taken Soto to 38, you know, I'm 43 and I wake up and my arm hurts from sleeping sometimes. Oh, you know what I mean? Like I, you get old, your body breaks down. Yeah. So they're going to pay him $30 million a year, more or less, you know, till he's 38 years old. So the contract the Nats offered was more than fair. So him turning it down, it's fine. It's a business decision. Maybe he can get more. I know that they've talked about, they wanted to beat or at least match Max Scherzer's $40 million roughly per year average. You know, they're using that as a comp, you know, but Max Scherzer got 40 million ish. Yeah. For 3 years. Yeah, he got, I think it was like 42, 43. Yeah. But he got it for like 3 years, not 15. The Nats made a fair offer. Soto turned it down. And you know, honestly, it's gotten a little nasty in the last couple of days between the player and the franchise.
Yeah. So do you think that if they, like you mentioned Max Scherzer, and do you think that if they offered him, say, and I mean shorter years, and what I mean by shorter years, something like 3 years and a lump sum of money, would that be something he considers, or do you think he really wants a long term deal with the annual, like the average amount of average for that year, about like 40 million? Is that what he's really looking for like 15, like 10, 15 years? Is that what he's really looking for?
I think, you know, I mean, if I had to just guess, I think that the point you just made is perfect. And this is the problem for the Nats, if you're a Nats fan, is Scott Boras, they don't counter offer. So it's like the Nats just offered him $440 million. It's not like he came back and was like, well, like, you know, maybe make it 10 years, 400, and we have a deal, and maybe do this. Like, they have no clue what he wants. They just say no. And basically they force the Nats into bidding against themselves. And look, it's a great strategy for Scott Boras. I mean, at the end of the day, he's going to get his guy paid. At the end of the day, Juan Soto, I don't think he's going to be wearing a Nationals. He's not going to be wearing a Nationals uniform probably by, I don't know if it's going to be in the next 2 weeks, but by March of next year, when spring training's starting, he's probably on another team. And that team probably would have paid him $500 million in some crazy extension. And, you know, good for them and good for Boras, good for Soto. You know, but that's the thing. The Nats don't, you know, they don't know what to offer. I mean, it, you know, I guess if the Nats really wanted him, they could, you know, come back and be, how about $500 million 13 years. But it's just a guessing game. And the problem with that is it could just be as simple as, you know, look, we know that the Nats are not a good team. They're rebuilding. And, you know, it could just be as simple as Juan Soto wants to be a Yankee, or Juan Soto wants to be a Dodger or a Padre, or, you know, we just don't even know because they don't really come back. So to me, it's just like, you know, if you're like, I'm married, but if you were trying to date someone, you know, it's like, and you keep texting them and they don't write you back, like at some point you move on, you know? And I think that, you already know, right? You know, it's like, they're not like giving you anything to work with. So to me as an Nats fan, I feel like that's kind of where we are with Soto and Boras right now. It's just, they're kind of ghosting us. Yeah. And, you know, it just might be better to move on. That's where I am.
Yeah, because it's wild, because you hear the argument, his thing is that he wants to win. That's now the thing he's been saying of late. Like, he just wants to win, and they haven't done the last couple of seasons. So I'm like, okay, if that's the case, I feel like you can put the ball in his court. If that's the case, if you want this team to prove to you that they're winning, then how about do a 3-year deal with a lump sum of money? And then with it, and if that work, if they're showing you that they're ready to win now, right, and not play around, just trying to win now, then you're willing to sign up for a longer term deal. But just do a three-year deal with some crazy amount of money, and now that's like a commitment. Now you're putting the onus back on the ball club. Say, okay, he only signs here because he's trying to win. Now we have to show him that we're trying to win baseball games rather than just total rebuild.
Yeah, no, I'd even go a little further. I mean, you know, if it was me, you know, the owner, Mike Rizzo, whatever, you know, maybe I'd do something like 8-320. If I just had to have a guy, I just had to have him. Mm-hmm. Like, why don't we give you 8-320? You're gonna get paid like crazy. That would be, no one's ever given like a $300 million contract for like 8 years. You get your $40 million a year that you have to have. We would get your prime. You know, you would have a chance to have some other team sign you at 30 years old, 31 years old, and pay you for your 30s. You know, and at that point with inflation, et cetera, maybe you'll make even more money, blah, blah. And then that gives us a window, you know, with new ownership coming in. You know, we do have some prospects. You know, if a new owner wants to come in and, like, you know, blow the barn doors off spending like Steve Cohen did for the Mets, then I think that could work out for everyone. But again, you know, if the other side's not going to counteroffer, you know, what are we even doing here? You know, that's sort of where I am with this whole thing. And the thing that's really unfortunate as a Nats fan, the guy's not a free agent for 2.5 more years. It's not like, you know, with Bryce Harper, 2018 was a mess. And that whole season was lost because that whole season became about his free agent sweepstakes and blah, blah, blah. And last night watching the home run derby was so much like 2018 where, you know, we watched that 2018 home run derby that Bryce Harper won in Nats Park. And we're like, well, this guy's probably leaving. And, you know, last night as a Nats fan, you're like, oh, cool. Yeah. Juan Soto won the home run derby. I don't care because he's not even going to be on the team in two weeks or 6 months. You know, one or the other. But, you know, so you know, it's one of these things where the fact that like, you know, look, if you want to have a winning baseball team, a championship baseball team, you're going to have to deal with guys like Scott Boras, you know, because they get their guys the money. They represent the best players. You're going to have to deal with them. And these were kind of deals with the devil that this franchise had to make when they were ascending and contending and eventually winning a World Series. And, you know, it worked out with Max Scherzer. You know, it worked out with a bunch of guys, but, you know, Strasburg, Rendon, et cetera, he's represented a lot of Nats. But, you know, at this point, the Nats are rebuilding. And this thing where we're doing a whole, you know, literally the All-Star Game home run derby was about Juan Soto's free agency 2 years from now last night. That's crazy. And I think if I'm a Nats fan or if I'm Ted Lerner or the new owner or Mike Rizzo, whoever, I'm just like getting out of this business for now. Like, let's trade this guy. Let's get 4 to 6 prospects, you know, hopefully 2 young guys who could be impact players, a couple more solid starters. They're all going to be cheap. We still have that $440 million that's not good enough for Juan Soto to sign other free agents who would be happy to take it, you know, and that would like expedite the rebuild. You know, we're just not at a point to be dealing with this. You know, I asked you on Twitter if I could swear on your show. I won't, but you know, with this, yes, basically, like we're just not like, we're not really at this point to be dealing with this, you know? So it actually, in a weird way, the drama of this situation allows the franchise to hit reset. I mean, you could like trade this guy, San Diego, the Yankees, you know, you could take their top 4 or 5 prospects. Like one of them might even take Patrick Corbin off your books. You could do a lot. A new owner could come in with more or less a clean salary slate and really, you know, have a bunch of prospects, like a bunch of guys coming up. And this team would have a window starting in like 2025-ish. They could go for another decade, especially if someone wanted to spend. And you know, right now, that's sort of where I am. That thing today where Scott Boras is complaining that Juan Soto had to fly commercial to LA for the home run derby. I mean, that to me just felt like the last straw. That it's like really like when now, you know, oh my God, he had to fly first class to Los Angeles. Petty. Like, oh, you know,
it's petty. I mean, Scott Boras is being real petty, and it's a bad look, to be honest with you, even to complain about that, knowing that, you know, what people, you know, people can't afford that. Like, I, honestly, it looks kind of like more like vanity than anything when you state that. Like, oh, he has to drive, he has to fly, he has to fly at a lesser value, right?
Yeah.
That's not a good thing to talk about, to be honest with you, knowing that some people don't have jobs or whatnot. But that's a whole different discussion.
Yeah. We have, you know, there's like a recession potentially coming. The economy's been a little strange. You know, we're kind of drawing it back since COVID. But, everyone looks at, you know, a hamburger used to cost $10, now it's $15. But, yeah. Oh, no, like Juan Soto only had to fly first class. Like, you know, I don't, none of my business. But that just seems like a crazy thing to really. It just seems like it's getting nasty.
That's a bad thing to put out there. I mean, I'm talking about for him and his client, to be honest with you. You're listening to The Urban Sports Scene, part of Amplifier Media at AmplifierMedia.com. Right now, I have Talk Nats Kevin Nibley on the line. So, Kevin, you mentioned some of the draft picks. What do you think is fair compensation for Juan Soto?
I think you start with another team's top four prospects, like straight up, like the top four. Definitely the top two. Like there's no, if a team wants Juan Soto, there's no like, well, you can maybe pick one of our best two. Like, no, if a team wants Juan Soto, getting him for basically three postseasons. We're talking about if they do this trade in the next 2 weeks, you get him for three postseasons, three chance to win a title, you know. We're probably taking your best four prospects, like straight out, and then probably a couple lotto ticket prospects, like lesser guys that maybe for whatever reason, you know, the scouts and the Nationals like. So we're probably talking like six prospects total, top four for sure, and then a couple other filler ones. And then depending on like if there's a bidding war, if a couple teams get involved and it actually like people really want to do it and it forces a team to overpay, then you're also maybe talking about a team taking Patrick Corbin's salary for the next 2.5 years as well and getting that off the books. So I think that's like a fair starting place. I do think the Yankees and the Padres are teams that jump out both of them are desperate in a certain way. Like the Yankees are desperate to get past Houston. San Diego is kind of desperate to break through. They both have some pretty decent prospects. And at least certainly with the Yankees, they have the money to dump Corbin on. Padres, I'm not, you know, they don't quite have the financial resources.
What about the Dodgers? They always have a good farm system. What about the Dodgers?
You could. I mean, you know, I don't, the Dodgers have their own, I would never write the Dodgers off. The Dodgers were a team that, you know, if you remember, I want to say this is like about 10 years ago, the Red Sox kind of reset their whole team and they traded them Carl Crawford and Adrian Gonzalez. They just like traded them everyone. Yeah. And just to basically get their salary cap, you know, just to get their financial house in order. And then, you know, Red Sox came back a year or two later in 2013, won the World Series. So I do think for the Nats, there is like an opportunity. It is kind of strange and out of nowhere the way the situation has escalated in the last week or so. There's a big opportunity for them to take advantage of it and maybe jumpstart their rebuild. And, you know, sad, I think most Nats fans would love to extend Juan Soto and love to be like, this guy's going to be our number, you know, 2, 3, or 4 hitter for the next, you know, 15 years, but it just feels like it's not kind of going that way. And for me, I'm like, you know, as an Nats fan, I'm like, if this guy could be flipped and we could get, you know, four more starters, you know, young, controllable, cheap starters to go with, you know, Josiah Gray, Ruiz, you know, Brady House, they just drafted Elijah Green, you know, like we, they're enough, you know, Cavalli is going to hopefully come up in a little bit. It's not the worst outcome. So I do think, though, for the Nationals organization, this situation needs to be settled in the next couple months. Like, hopefully in the next 2 weeks, but if not the next 2 weeks, certainly before spring training next year. This needs to be settled. Either Soto's a Nat for life or, you know, we rebooted the whole team with a bunch of young guys trading them. It's got to be one or the other is how I feel.
You mentioned Elijah Green. All right, so the Nats drafted the outfielder with the fifth pick of the MLB draft. Green played high school baseball out of IMG Academy in Florida. What can you tell us about the young kid?
he's definitely like a, he's, the Nets are swinging for the fences with him in a way. He wasn't the safest pick, but he could have tremendous upside. You know, it's one of those things. It's like, he's like Bitcoin, right? You know, like the people who love Bitcoin are like, oh my God, you know, if I buy it now, I'm going to be a gazillionaire in 10, 20 years. Right. And then the people who hate it are just like, oh, it's like now, you know, or you're going to lose all your money. Right. So Green's sort of like that kind of a prospect where, physically, he's amazing. He's the son of NFL tight end. I think Eric Green. I think his father's name was Eric Green. He played for the Ravens. Yeah. You know, he basically has kind of a Mike Trout-esque body, and he has a pretty elite power tool and speed tool. The question with him is his contact tool. You know, he had a high swing and miss rate at a certain point in high school that was alarming to some scouts. People have said that through like certain showcase games, et cetera, he's corrected that. He's an interesting pick. It's definitely like a hot, you know, if it works out, you know, you might've just drafted, you know, like a Giancarlo Stanton or like a Mike, you know, you might've drafted a center fielder that could go like 30-30, you know, 40-40, elite power, elite speed, defense arm, the whole thing, like five tool player, you know, or if, you know, it doesn't work out, you drafted a guy who's going to wash out in double A because he just can't hit, you know, he can't make enough contact. So I'm not a scout. I'm kind of just telling you that those are the takes that I've heard, you know? But you know, I think, you know, for the Nets, you know, something, a big swing like that isn't the worst idea. You know, they've made big swings before that have worked out. So, you know, I think he was regarded, he certainly was regarded as a top five pick. I mean, I think MLB.com had him as high as number three. So he does have his detractors for sure, but he also has a lot of people who are like, you know, this guy has the best tools of any, literally of any player in a draft. So, you know, if you can just develop his contact tool, then, you know, he could be the best player in the whole draft.
Well, that'd be awesome, man. Hopefully it does, you know, some good news happens for Nats fans. Hey, but Kev, before I let you go, can you tell our listeners what you got featured on TalkNats.com? Maybe you're talking about Soto, Green, I don't know, some of the other draft picks. And also, can you talk about your, can you put out your social media?
Yeah, of course. So go to TalkNats. It's TalkNats.com. It's at TalkNats on Twitter. A lot of Soto talk. That's kind of, you know, consuming everything. And there have been some good articles lately. We have articles from some writers. Like, you know, there's an article of like why we should sign Soto for whatever he wants forever, because he's going to be a Hall of Famer and he's the greatest guy. And then we have articles of like why he shouldn't be here in 2 weeks. You know, so you definitely have like the whole spectrum. A really good content there. And then, and then me, it's just at K_Nibley on Twitter. I probably will get into a lot of arguments on the internet this week about the Soto situation.
I'm here for you.
Aside from that, like a couple movie stuff, just random stuff, you know. Thanks as always for having me. I really appreciate it.
We're going to definitely keep talking, man. I think it's going to be an interesting couple of weeks. I want to have you on if something does go down, if a trade goes down. So I will have you'll hear from me. Put it that way.
Awesome.
You'll hear from me. All right. Well, Kevin.
Awesome. Always appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Kevin. You take it easy, all right, my man?
All right. Take care, bud.
I'll take care.
All right.
Again, that's Kevin Nibley. So that's the, you know, from TalkNats. You can follow Kev on Twitter. That's at K_Nibley. Again, at K_Nibley. All right. My O's are surprisingly 500 going into the All-Star break. Tony Penty from Orioles Hangout will join yours truly after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. For ages, you dig? Deuces.
Guys, are you looking for that extra confidence when it's time to have fun? Let me tell you about BlueChew.com. BlueChew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable form and at a fraction of the cost. BlueChew's tablets help men combat all forms of ED Blue Chew is also an online prescription service, so no visits to the doctor's office, no awkward conversations, and no waiting in line at the pharmacy. And it ships right to your door in a discreet package. The process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com, consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. And the best part, all done online. Blue Chew's tablets, made in the United States, and they prepare and ship direct, so it's cheaper than a pharmacy. And here's a special deal for our listeners. Try Blue Chew free when you use our promo code URBAN at checkout. Just pay $5 shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code URBAN to receive your first month free.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with myself, Wole, the homie Will T, and Ray Jeezy are out, and we are part of Ampire Media at AmpireMedia.com. All right, right now I have Tony Penty from Orioles Hangout. What's up, Tony, and welcome to the Urban Sports Scene.
Hey, well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for being on. So, Tony, I'm going to give you a backstory. I am a big Orioles fan, but I'm usually surrounded by national fans. And this is now I'm excited. They're out. So I was like, you know what? Since I'm going to do this show by myself, I want to talk about my Baltimore Orioles. Like, I want to talk about them because I've been so hyped this season since, you know, I've been an Orioles fan since Cal. Like, I've grown up on the Baltimore Orioles. And now, like, you know, the Adam Jones, Nick Markakis, Matt Wieters, that whole regime, and obviously Manny Machado, and with Buck, and, you know, they brought back, you know, that Orioles vibe again, and then we went through the rebuild. But now these young guys have got me inspired. So I am ecstatic to talk to you about this.
Yeah. You know what? It's a good time finally to be an Oriole fan in a long time. And it's obviously, you can see a lot of fans that are starting to come back to the team or interested in the team again. And that's a good thing. You know, I know there's some people like, oh, they're bandwagon fans and they kind of get on them a little bit, but you know, at the end of the day is there's a lot of things out there. And obviously when your team wins, you're going to have more people that are going to follow them closely and do that. But I just look at it as, look, everybody's an Oriole fan. If they want to enjoy it, enjoy it. And there's a lot of things to like about this team.
Definitely. They play so hard. That's what I love about them. So before we talk about the O's, could you tell our listeners about Orioles Hangout?
Sure. Yeah. So we're one of the longest running. In fact, we are the longest running site that covers a professional baseball team that's on the internet. We've been around since 1996, and you know, we've been covering the Orioles and their minor league system since then. Started off as just a one page fan page. You know, just something to kind of to get involved with, and kind of eventually turned into a business. So it's been a long time I've been doing this. It's been a lot of fun, and we kind of made our niche really the minor leagues. It's always been kind of my niche. I've always had a really big interest in it. I do a lot of the prospect stuff. I do a lot of my own scouting. I have a lot of industry people I can talk with and share ideas with, and I'm a former scout myself for a major league team. So it's kind of my passion portion of it. But obviously, also, you know, I follow the Orioles and talk and discuss them as well.
Yeah, and their farm system. This must be a treat because their farm system is strong.
Yeah, and this is obviously the strongest farm system that I've ever covered. I mean, when you're looking at the team, you know, you can look at any level and find prospects at each one of them, and good prospects. You're talking about guys that are potential impact players when you start looking down there, and you're seeing guys like Gunnar Henderson already up in AAA and Westberg, and then not talking about, you're not even talking about the pitchers, you know, DL Hall and obviously G-Rod, even though he's hurt. You know, you're talking about these kind of guys are impact players. And obviously the Orioles have a new draft now, and you know, they're hopefully adding to those guys. You know, obviously having the first overall pick and having Jackson Holliday gives them a guy that should be an impact guy, right? This is going to be an impact prospect. He should be eventually an impact player at the major league level, you know, you're going to hope with a 1-1 pick that he's going to be that guy, right? But all the talent is there, and when you add in a guy like Holiday, you're talking about a top level talent when you're seeing guys now graduate off that list, like Rutschman. You know, he's no longer available in there, but now he's going to become a guy. So it's like every year they're filling those guys back in, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, and actually, I like to talk about Jackson Holiday. Obviously, the son of Matt Holiday, one of the better baseball players out there. He played with the Cardinals, and also I'm trying to think of the other team he played for other than the Cardinals. He's been around after the Cardinals. But Matt Holiday was a solid 30 home run type of hitter. But can you tell us a little bit about his son and tell us about what he's going to bring to the table? And he's a guy that you can just is a guy playing shortstop that which will do you think in a major he'll play shortstop? And also, you know, how do you see him? You know, obviously being a kid out of high school, when do you think that call up will happen for him?
Yeah, sure. Hey, by the way, his father was also a Rocky.
Rocky first, then the Cardinals. Thank you. Yeah,
that's his main guys. But you know, obviously, you know, Jackson is a left-handed hitting shortstop. They believe he has all the tools to stay at shortstop. You know, he's not a real big guy. He's 6'1". He's built solidly, but he hasn't really grown into his man strength already. But the good news is when you start looking at things like, you know, they do like the K-motion sensor type of information that judges your torso speeds, your hip speeds, your arms, the hands. He has, you know, pretty much off the chart numbers when you look at that. He even actually has better numbers than Andrew Jones. Drew Jones. So he actually has better. The only person that has better hands than him was Tamar Johnson, who has incredible off the chart hand speed. But when you start looking at things like that, his EV and the fact that he hasn't even matured into his man strength. I mean, when you look at him, he looks like he's about 12 years old. And, you know, but that's kind of a good thing because you're kind of looking at it. You feel like when you watch him and you just look at him physically, he doesn't look physically mature, yet he's doing physically mature things on the field, which tells you when he does grow into those things. Just looking at some of the jump that we saw from Gunnar Henderson compared to when he first showed up when he was 18 years old, and then you look at where he is at 21, you can start to wish and start to really think about what Jackson Holiday should look like. And the good news is he's not as big as Gunner, so he shouldn't grow out a shortstop. So that's a good thing. He should be a guy that should stay up the middle for the Orioles for a long time.
How does this for you? How does this Orioles team right now, in terms of, you know, the young talent? How does it compare with that young talent that we saw not too long with Adam Jones, Nick Markakis, Matt Wieters? You had Manny Machado, in the pitchers, Tillman with, you know, Tillman, Brian Mattis, all these individuals. Zach Britton. How does this young nucleus compare to that nucleus?
Well, when they first started coming up and you saw those guys, there was obviously they came up a little bit at different times when you're looking at when Jones was up and, you know, obviously Machado was at it when they were ready to compete. You know, that's why he was bumped up so fast. I would say if this team was ready to compete this year, even though they're doing well, I don't really think they're a contender, but if they were a legitimate contender, I could have seen them pulling up Gunnar Henderson and bringing him into the mix and kind of being that Manny Machado kind of guy, right? Where he's not going to be a superstar round bat, but he's going to do some good things for you. You're looking at the beginning of that talent finally making its way up there. You know, we started seeing a little bit even before that with Ryan Mountcastle and Mullins and Hayes, and we saw those guys already kind of make it up here, and they were kind of the very beginning. You know, even they're the pre-Elias beginning of some of the drafts that were happening. And I know we talk a lot about Elias has done, and his group has done a ton of great things to build this organization into where they are now. But you can't really dismiss some of the scouting that was done beforehand, because you're seeing guys like Mountcastle and Hayes and Mullins, Mancini, and guys like that who were the previous regime's scouting. So, I mean, it's a little bit of a mix, obviously, whenever you have this, but you're seeing so much young talent on the cusp of being ready to come up and help this team. And that's what's so exciting is, you know, it's not like you're looking down there and you're seeing a bunch of 30-plus-year-olds that are doing well. You know, I mean, there's only one, you know what, one guy in the starting lineup right now, and that's Trey Mancini, that's more than 28 years old. You know, most of them are 26, 27. They're kind of entering their prime. You're seeing, and then now you have all the guys we were already talking about, Rutschman finally making it. You know, you're going to see Henderson at some point very soon. You're going to be seeing, you know, Westberg, and you're going to see these guys. And we haven't even talked about guys like Colton Cowser or Kobe Mayo, some of these other guys that, or even Heston Kerstad is finally playing. You know, these are guys that have high ceilings that are still lower portions of the minors. So it's a lot of exciting things and a lot of exciting players.
Definitely exciting time to be a Baltimore Orioles fan. So, all right, the Orioles are going into the All-Star break playing 500 baseball with a 46-46 record. No one thought this team would be this competitive. Why has this team been this competitive?
Well, it's a few things. I mean, first off, I think we saw some of these guys start to mature that we talked about, right? You're seeing Ryan Mountcastle and Austin Hayes putting together a really solid year. But I'll tell you right now, what's really happened is, one, the bullpen was completely rebuilt. And I don't think that they, you know, the fact of converting Jorge Lopez into an all-star closer obviously is huge. They already had Dylan Tate. But outside of that, they converted Keegan Aiken from which is a move I've been saying for about 4 years should have happened, that he was going to be better in relief. And sure enough, he goes out and becomes this two and three inning reliever. And he's been fantastic in that role. It's a much better role for him. He can kind of focus on just a couple of pitches and he can really kind of dominate, which is what he's done. But, you know, you got to give Elias credit for going out and getting guys off the waiver wire who have been very, very good. You're talking about guys like Sandel Perez. You know, pulling this guy off the waiver wire, he was a guy that was, Cuban exile who they had there was some mix-up with the original contract that made him put him on a 40-man roster faster than they wanted to, and basically he ran out of options, and at some point they just, you know, they had to give he had got traded to the Reds, but the Reds needed room, and they kind of DFA'd him, and the Orioles got this guy in no time. He's basically Tanner Scott's replacement and much better at it.
Much better.
You know? I don't know if I ever trusted Tanner Scott in a game.
Who has?
You know?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I wanted him to succeed, but because he had the fastball,
sure.
Was crazy. But, yeah.
And I know you. Yeah, and I know you're too young to remember a guy named Don Stanhouse back in the day, but you may know of him or heard of him. They used to call him Full Pack because he used to make Earl Weaver smoke full packs of cigarettes while he was in relief because he was always walking guys and doing this. But he was a good reliever for a couple of years for the Orioles. But, you know, you have guys like him coming in here. You have Brian Baker has been a good pickup. Joey Crable has been amazing. He's been very good. And then you got to talk about, you know, the arrival of Felix Bautista.
Oh my God, amazing.
I mean,
amazing.
I watched him last year. I knew of him just because the name, and I'd heard he had a good arm, but really was never a prospect, really didn't ever do anything. And then I started seeing the numbers he was putting up at Frederick last year, Aberdeen last year, and I went and looked him up, and I watched some video, and I went, holy smokes. This guy, who was listed as 6'5", 190, was 6'7", 270 pounds, and he was throwing 101 miles an hour. And I'm sitting there thinking, holy moly, this guy is a legitimate prospect. And to Elias's credit, they pushed him very quickly through the system last year and had him ready for the major leagues this year. And now, look at him. He's one of the best relievers on the team.
Yeah, definitely. I have a question for you with that. It kind of reminds me of Mariano Rivera and Wettman back in the day when they both it was Mario with the Yankees.
Sure, yep.
So it reminds me of that. Like, do you think eventually, like, Bautista will be the closer in a couple years, or you think Lopez has it? Because this has been a great year for Lopez, and this him moving to being a closer from being a starter last season has been amazing. But I'm with
right.
you. When I look at Bautista, I see a closer. Like, I see a closer.
Right. Well, I think without doubt, and he's got ice water in his veins. He doesn't get rattled very easily.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, of course, when you're as big as he is and you throw 100 miles an hour, it's pretty easy to have confidence, right? But I, that was another thing I really liked about him when I saw him in the minor leagues was just he had that persona. Like, he was like, look, you know, even when he walked a couple of guys, it just, you never saw him start to, you know, give up on his stuff or start to try to nibble. He's just like, you know what? Okay, I can walk the bases full, but I can just as easily strike out the next three batters, you know, which he did a lot of times. So, yeah, I do think he could be a future closer. I mean, but the one thing people got to realize with Jorge Lopez is that he's not a free agent until 2025. And he's going to be he's arbitration eligible next year. Obviously, he's going to get a big raise off of $1.5 million this year. But this is, you know, you're not talking about a guy who all of a sudden, you know, you're going to need huge money for the next couple of years. You got a fairly controllable closer. Now, if the right deal comes by and you can get some value for him as in maybe some type of starting pitcher, prospect who's going to be here for a number of years, right? Not just a rental, right? The Orioles aren't going to be trading guys for rentals, but if you can get a guy where Elias feels like he could be piece of the future moving on, Lopez is a guy you probably would do that for just because you do have Felix Bautista sitting here.
Yeah.
You know, you do have Bautista. You can maybe move Crabill into Bautista's role. Brian Baker has been fantastic since about the last 3 or 4 weeks. You know, he's throwing 98. I don't think people realize he's throwing 98 miles an hour.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, you know, this is a guy I saw, and when the Orioles picked him up, I went and scouted him when he was in the Toronto system. And I was surprised that this guy was DFA'd. I mean, he was still throwing 95, 96 in the minors last year. But, you know, I didn't see 98. You know, I saw a guy in 94, 95. You know, sometimes he was in 93. And, you know, now you're seeing a guy throwing 98. He's got a really good, you know, split finger. And the slider can be good at times. So, I mean, it's just amazing how that whole bullpen was rebuilt. I mean, last year there wasn't one guy that came in the game that you felt good about.
Not at all.
This year, you literally can say the opposite.
Yeah.
It's almost like if they give up a run, you're almost surprised. That's how good they've been. And that's a credit.
Yeah, and that's crazy because it's wild because it reminds me of how Buck used to handle the bullpen. Like when Buck was here, the Orioles bullpen was a key. You know what I mean? It was a key.
Sure. So, I mean, when you have Britton, O'Day, and Brock out in your bullpen, you tend to look pretty good,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, yeah.
And that's kind of the way that's happened this year.
Yeah, so it's amazing. Like it's funny how, you know, certain things people want to change in baseball, the same thing typically still helps the team win baseball games. All right, so how much – I'm speaking of a manager, I mentioned Buck, but, you know, Brandon Hyde manages this team. How much credit does he deserve for this team's fine play?
You know, it's funny you ask that because I get asked that question a lot about, like, what do I think about, you know, Hyde and do I think he's going to be the long-term guy here? And here's what I always tell him. I have the same answer every time. You cannot judge Hyde on what his win-loss record has been since he's been here.
Great.
It's clear to anybody that he has been given no talent up until this year and that – or very little talent, I should say. I mean, obviously a few guys here and there, but there was no way he could win with the guys he had. This is the first team – that you now can see him making some moves, making some little things here and there. Look, we can always argue about a pitching, you know, or you shouldn't have pulled this guy. Look, that happens to every manager, right? But what I see is you have a bunch of guys that like him. They respect him. They play hard. You never see the team coming out and doing stupid things. You know, that's a sign of a manager that's doing some right things. And I think the other thing is, I think baseball's changed a little bit in that, you know, some of the decisions, I think they like lineup decisions, who's going to be available pitching wise. I think a lot of that's done pregame, right? So, and I think it's not just the old days of, you know, Buck Showalter sitting in his office coming out with a lineup. I think that stuff is developed between analytics, between SIG, between other folks that kind of go through all the scouting reports, look at what they think is the best lineup. I'm sure Hyde has say in it. I'm sure he has, he's part of that conversation, especially when it comes down to the health of players and what he's been seeing. But it's not like the old days where I think the manager did a whole lot of things in a vacuum. And I think baseball like that as a whole is like that. So really what you need out of your manager is a good leader. You know, you need a good leader, a guy who understands it, who accepts some of the old school stuff. But I mean, but also, I should say, understands the old school stuff, but understands and accepts some of the new school analytic stuff. And it's pretty clear he does with all that stuff. I think he's got, you know, obviously I think he deserves an opportunity with a good team, with good talent. If, you know, we're 3 years from now and the team has a lot of talent and they're not doing well, then maybe he's not your guy. But he certainly deserves a chance to keep winning with this core group.
Yeah, I've liked what he's done for the ball club. I actually, you know, I've actually seen that, you know, for me, I can tell, like, the losing, like, for any competitor, losing hurts. And I could tell for him it did hurt. And to your point, right. It was like, you know, he understood the process, though. You know what I mean? Like, he understood what they were doing because they had to kind of build a farm system. So they had to kind of, basically tank. And so that's what they did. And it obviously is rough for anybody who's a manager and wanting, because all you want to do is win. You want to win ball games. I don't care who you are. You want to win ball games.
That's one thing. I was like, anybody that would take away this team from him after all the losing he had to do, that would be one of the cruelest things I've ever seen in my life. Exactly. Because, you know, I don't know what his overall record is compared to all-time managers, but it has to be one of the lowest, you know, winning percentages right now. But again, it's clear, you know, and I know people say, well, you know, there was like the Dave Tremblays of the world who were kind of just stopgaps. That's never what Hyde was.
Never.
You know, that he was never that guy. He wasn't like an old school guy sitting in your minor league system that you go, let me give him a chance for a couple of years. And then when, you know, we're ready, we'll move on, which is, you know, again, Dave Tremblay was a good baseball man, but it was clear that's where their thought was when they made him manager. Mm-hmm. That was never like that with Hyde.
Yes.
I think he's a guy that this is a guy that was highly thought of as a coach with the Cubs. He, you know, he worked under Madden. He worked under some McKeon at times. I mean, he's had some of the best baseball minds who he was a coach for. So this guy has all the training. He was a guy that other teams were liked. So it wasn't like they just went and got anybody and gave him a shot. This is a guy that really I think is going to be a very good manager when it's all said and done.
All right. So before I let you go, I do have one question. And you pretty much mentioned it a little bit, but I do want to get your opinion. Can this team sustain this play and possibly contend for a playoff spot?
Well, you know, you can never say never when it comes down to that. I mean, they're 3.5 games out of the final wild card spot. Now, granted, there's 5 teams ahead of them, so that means they have to play better than all 5 of those teams. You can't say never, you know. But I would say that I still think it's going to be a little bit of a surprise if that happens. The Orioles, you know, of the last – when they were having these winning streaks, you know, they were playing a lot of guys, a lot of teams in the Central. You know, they're going to be playing, you know, a lot more of the Tampas, the Bostons, they need to play Yankees hard. But they're going to be playing a lot of these guys in their own division. Even Toronto's good this year. So they've got a lot of good teams to still play a lot. And as much as I do think this team's exciting and it's better, there's still things that you look at. You know, they're still starting. You know, I mean, I'm still looking down there and we're seeing Tyler Nevin still getting starts. We're seeing, and we're still seeing Odor playing second base. Look, Odor is a great guy in the clubhouse. It's clear, right? Yeah. You can just see he oozes. He's the kind of guy you want on your team when it comes to being in the clubhouse. You know, he's the first guy out there with the chain and putting on a homer. I mean, you can tell he just loves to play baseball, but let's just be honest. I mean, he's hitting .202. He's got .656 OPS. Yeah, he's going to hit some homers for you, but he's not a very good player overall. That's not the kind of guy you want starting for you if you're a real contender. So I think there's still a little bit of holes in here they got to fill. I think Adley's obviously trying to get his own legs underneath him. He's going to be better. He obviously has been better, but there's going to be ups and downs with him in his first year. I never expected him to be an impact guy the second he arrived. So it's just one of those kind of transition years where you're seeing some talent. There's still a couple of holes, but those holes are going to be filled very quickly with guys coming out of that minor league system. So I think next year is a much better time when the Orioles should go into next season thinking they are wild card contenders.
Okay.
Right. And I hope the year after that, I'm hoping that we're thinking they are division winning, you know, contenders. You know, that's kind of the timeline they should be on.
I hope so too. Actually, I do have one more question. Since you are a scout, there's this player I've been waiting for a while. You haven't been mentioned, but he was a part of the trade to the Dodgers. I want to say, I forgot which player was it. I'm thinking about Diaz. His name is Diaz. Yeah, I've been waiting on Diaz. Like, what's going on with Diaz? Like, I was told that he was supposed to be like the guy, and he hasn't been up.
Yeah.
Other than September, he's only up in September.
Well, actually, I think we only ever see him in spring training because right after spring training, he gets hurt.
Yeah,
he's just been mired in injuries. This is a guy that hasn't had, you know, over 400 play appearances in a season since he was with the Dodgers organization.
Yeah.
He just can't stay healthy. He's had several injuries. It's not just one consistent one. It's just every time he turns around, it's something. It's a hamstring. It's a oblique. It's always something, and he just can't stay on the field. And when he has stayed on the field, he's had trouble being consistent with his offensive game. You know, he doesn't have much. He's a guy with a lot of like tools when you watch him, but he's never developed a plan at the plate. He still doesn't, you know, it's not like he's thinking through as a bat. He's not thinking, you know, he's the kind of guy that you can throw three straight, you know, sliders outside and he'll swing at all three of them. Like, he didn't learn the first two times. That's what they're trying to do to him. So you'll see that. But saying that, you'll also see him do some really good things. And you'll see him, I mean, trust me, that he has plus power when he gets a hold of balls. I mean, he get a ball 500 feet. He play a decent outfield, but he's not super fast. He's not going to be a guy that you're going to say, oh, he's a game changer defensively. You know, he'll be okay. He'll be similar like Santander is for you out there defensively. So, you know, at this point, I've got him downgraded to maybe a fourth outfielder kind of guy. I don't think he's ever going to be who they thought they were getting. But the good news is Dean Kramer has pitched well this year. And obviously, if Dean Kramer can continue to pitch, he ends up being a starting pitcher, you're going to take that for your turn.
Yes, definitely. So, Art, well, you know, thanks for being on the show. Hey, could you tell our listeners how they can hit you up on social media or anything else you would like to plug? This has been amazing. I've enjoyed this thoroughly.
Oh, great. Well, I appreciate you having me. It's been fun. And obviously, you can go to OrielsHangout.com. Our message board is really where most of the activity is. You just go up to the top, hit message board. You can sign up for free, join in on the conversation. The best thing about our conversation there is it is pure sports talk. It is pure. We all talk about the Orioles. There's lots of different activities, but there's no the wild, wild west in out there where there's not cursing. We don't allow people to talk down to other people. We try to have people that want to have really high quality conversations and it's so many good people go there. You get so much information. The second there's any kind of news, literally that's the first place I go to my message board because I know someone's already has links up. They've already had all the information that you could possibly want about what's going on, plus a whole conversation already about the move. So it's amazing. We do a lot of stuff on prospects there. We do things on the international. We'll have stuff on the international signings when that happens in January. So really from the time somebody gets assigned all the way to when they're playing for the Orioles, you can follow their progress there on OrielsHangout.com.
Well, I'm going to check it out. Hey, thank you, Tony. We appreciate it. I appreciate it. I'm hope to have you on again because this has been awesome, to be honest with you.
All right, man.
This has been great.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it anytime.
All right, take care.
Yep, you too.
All right. Again, that is Tony Pinsey. Make sure you follow Orioles Hangout on Twitter at Orioles Hangout. Again, at Orioles Hangout. All right, as part of our HBCU Corner segment, we'll play our interview with Grambling State University football coach Hugh Jackson after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. For Aegis Yiddick, deuces.
Guys, are you looking for that extra confidence when it's time to have fun? Let me tell you about BlueChew.com. BlueChew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable form and at a fraction of the cost. BlueChew's tablets help men combat all forms of ED. Blue Chew is also an online prescription service, so no visits to the doctor's office, no awkward conversations, and no waiting in line at the pharmacy, and it ships right to your door in a discreet package. The process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com, consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. And the best part, all done online. Blue Chew's tablets, made in the United States, and they prepare and ship direct, so it's cheaper than a pharmacy. And here's a special deal for our listeners. Try Blue Chew free when you use our promo code URBAN at checkout. Just pay $5 shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code URBAN, to receive your first month free.
Welcome back to the Urban Sports Scene. And it's, of course, it is time for our HBCU Corner segment. Again, check us out at Empire Media. That's EmpireMedia.com. So for the first time in a while, Wole, I'm going to be honest. I can say that I don't need to introduce this guest for real. Like, this guy needs no introduction. However, this is the Urban Sports Scene, so this is what we do. So with that being said, I now have the privilege of welcoming our special guest who has over three decades of coaching experience at both the professional and the collegiate level. The early stages of his journey saw our guest serve as graduate assistant at his alma mater, the University of the Pacific. His many stops along his coaching track include stints at Cal as well as USC. Our guest also served as an assistant right here in our own backyard while coaching the running backs, in addition to being offensive coordinator for what is now known as the Washington Commanders. Back then it was the Washington Redskins, of course. His success ultimately resulted in our guest being named head coach of the Cleveland Browns in 2016. And just like during his time there, we got to see a glimpse of what his hard work led him to when he was featured on HBO's award-winning series, Hard Knocks. He's currently the head coach at the historic Grambling State University. Welcome to the Urban Sports Scene, Mr. Hugh Jackson. Thanks for joining us, Coach.
Hey, thanks for having me. It was a great time there in D.C. With the Commanders, Redskins, whatever you want to call them. But no, that was a fun time for me in my career. Had a lot of time, a lot of fun. Which kind of, like you said, kind of spearheaded me to become a two-time NFL head coach at Oakland and Cleveland.
Yeah, you did, and I want to say this because I remember watching that Oakland team. You did a good job with the Raiders. You really did. Jason Campbell, the quarterback, you did a really good job with that team.
Absolutely. Well, you know what? Thank you. And I was fortunate to get Jason, have him for a little while, but I was fortunate to work with Al Davis. Al Davis was one of my champions, one of the champions of my career, truly believed in me, and I believed in him. We had an unbelievable relationship, and I sure hate losing him in 2011.
I know. Well, Coach, we typically over here, we're fans of homecomings and whatnot, so our question to you is, have you experienced an HBCU homecoming, and if you did, what was that experience like?
I experienced one at Tennessee State, and it was great, you know, but not like I think I'm experienced at Grambling. I way different, but the culture, the food, the entertainment, you know, people come to watch the band, you know, yes, they want to see that more so they want to see the football game. I'm like, wait a minute, we got some good stuff going on out here. And they wanted to see all the other stuff. We got a penalty to start the second half because a band was still on the field. Are you kidding me?
Wow.
But no, there's nothing like it. It is really a great time. You get all the fraternities and sororities. They're really about coming out and supporting that homecoming. But homecomings at HBCUs are like nothing anybody's ever seen. Mm.
So you're excited to experience a Grambling homecoming?
I surely am, because I've heard so much about it. I hear there's no place to park. There's no place to walk. There's no place to do anything. I can't wait for the campus to overflow from that.
So, Coach, we're going to dive right into it. So in December of 2021, you were announced as the head coach of Grambling State University. What made you want to choose Grambling?
Well, first, I would say to you, what would make me not want to choose Grambling?
Love it. Love it.
Eddie G. Robinson, coach, one of the greatest coaches in the history of football. If I wasn't going to get a chance to go do it the way I wanted to, why would I not go back and see if I can make Grambling State University back to where it used to be, among the King Kongs of the HBCUs, because of what Coach Eddie Robinson did, knowing the history of it and the tradition of it, and four Hall of Famers played there. My question was, why would I not go there and try to revive that program?
Absolutely. So, Coach, I'm going to cut right to the chase. I know you've been asked this question before. You have over 3 decades of coaching experience. You don't even look old enough to have been coaching for 30 years, to be honest. But how has that experience helped in your recruiting at Grambling?
You know, I've seen it all and kind of done it all. I've coached and recruited Heisman Trophy winners to guys who've been all pros, to guys who've been just NFL players. So I kind of have a vision of what it looks like, you know, and so I can impart that to my staff. We can go build a roster that best fits us so I can help in that area. I've coached every offensive position. I've coached on defense. I've coached on special teams. So it's not a phase of offense, defense, or special teams I haven't coached. I've been involved with some high caliber quarterbacks, and that's where it all starts. At the end of the day, you got to have a quarterback to win, and got to have a good offensive line to protect him. You got to have good people to throw to him, you know? So I know what that looks like. So the experience of running an organization, recruiting players at a high level, I know what that's like. So I've been able to put all those things in place here at Grambling, and that's what we're trying to accomplish here.
So, Coach, what are your goals for 2022 season, and what will be your team's identity?
Well, the goal is to truly change the culture. First and foremost, get back to winning, right? I mean, at the end of the day, that's why they hired me. They hired me to bring winning to the university. I accept that challenge. My staff does too. You know, in our business, people have to understand what your business is about. It's about winning and graduating your student athletes. So we got to do that at a high level, and I understand that. And then I want our players to experience one of the greatest times in their careers. I want them to earn a degree and do something worthwhile with their lives while winning a ton of football games. So in order to do that, we got to be as good off the field as we got to be on the field, because they all go hand in hand. So we have to do things off the field that gives us the best chance to be successful on the field. And that's going to class, being very accountable, taking care of business, being fundamentally sound when it comes to football, and doing the things that good football teams do.
Coach, you mentioned Coach Robinson earlier when you were talking, and it just made me think about the historical nature of HBCU football. I'm sure you recognize this is the right time to be a head coach at HBCU, but just expound a bit. What does it mean to you to be coaching at HBCU?
It means that for me personally, I've been through the whole gamut, right? I mean, I've done the Power Five college deal. I've done the National Football League, and now I've come to what people say is an HBCU, and it is. But honestly, I get tired of talking about HBCU football because we're no different than anybody else. You know, we play great football. There's great coaches in our conference. There's great football players. And that stigma to me a little bit means that we're less than, you know? Yeah, no, we might not have the same resources as everybody, but every school don't have the same resources neither. So, but we got football players, you know, and our football players are seen a little bit different than Power Five football players. But last time I checked, they got 2 legs and 2 arms and 1 head. It's no different. So I want to try to change that. I want to be able to give back and say, we're playing just a good football, great coaching, great environments. Look, you said it earlier, our homecomings are a whole lot different than these other homecomings because they're special. So I want to put us back on the map, and Deion Sanders has done a great job. Eddie George has done a good job. You know, Coach Simmons down at FAMU has done a good job. There's a lot of great coaches in this conference. So we need to have the same standards as everybody else.
Real quick, as a follow-up, I have felt like that before, especially in regards to the HBCU combine for the NFL. So should we get rid of that? Does it need to be a separate combine for HBCU players?
I hope that you said in the future, because I think these guys are just as comparable as the other guys. You know, I do. I mean, that's what I'm talking about. And Deion had to really get mad about there being no draft picks from the HBCUs to get this combine. Well, you just said it. Why do we need that combine? Just invite more players to the freaking combine, you know, and give some of these guys an opportunity. Let them compete on a daily basis with these people, whether it be in the meetings when they have those individual meetings or whether it be on the field when they're doing the drills. And so you can see firsthand where these guys stack, because I truly believe talent stacks itself. And I think there's some very talented players in our conference.
Like you mentioned earlier, Coach, there are a bunch of talented players in your conference. So what would you tell a top recruit who was thinking about going to an HBCU or going to Grambling and telling them, if they're thinking about, say, going to Alabama, what would you tell them about?
Come on and play for me for this reason. We're going to create an environment for you to be great. You're going to get coached like you've never been coached before. Fundamentally, emotionally, spiritually, we're going to help you where you need to be. And then we're going to give you an opportunity to earn an unbelievable degree and do something worthwhile with your life. So why would you not go to HBCU?
Preach. I'm with it. I'm so with it. Hey, Coach, this has been dope. Thanks for being on. Is there anything you would like to add?
No, what I like to add is I would hope that the fans, you know, really start to watch the HBCU games at a whole different level. You know, I get it, and I hate to say it this way, but I know sometimes when you watch the NFL and they go watch USL football, right? It looks a little bit, so I get that. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're not talking about that. We're talking about college football players that could play at the Power Five schools just like Power Five players could play at the HBCU schools. Uh-huh. That's why a lot of those guys are coming from the portals to play at our schools. So it's not very different here. We're not coaching any different. We're not running any different plays than what they run. We're not creating any other different environment. So why not come to an HBCU, and why not get behind this movement and watch the HBCU games at a different level?
Well, Coach, thanks for being on HBCU Corner. We appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate you coming back. Give us a follow on Twitter, brother. We see you now.
You got it. Yes, sir.
All right, Coach.
All right, man. Take care now. Thanks again. All right.
Bye-bye. Coach, Grambling State University Coach Hugh Jackson. Dope dude, man. You see, the Urban Sports Scene, man, one thing we do it big. You know what I mean? Do it real big. Appreciate them. You know, HBCU Corner, it's growing. This movement is legit. You know what I'm saying? Hands down, it's definitely legit. Hey, before we end this show, make sure you subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, follow us on Twitter at Urban Sports Scene. IG at Urban Sports Scene, and like our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page, make sure you subscribe to the Urban Sports Scene YouTube channel as well. Hey, check out the home of the Urban Sports Scene, Ampire Media at AmpireMedia.com, and this show can be found on Podcast DC. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all of the Ampire shows as well as other great content. Hey, thanks for tuning in. You know we appreciate you all, and keep showing us love. Anyway, you've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene for ages. You dig? Deuces. A mega. Lead us out, big homie. Deuce.